Welcome to Bee's Table Talk, the new St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce podcast. I'm your host, Bee Kyle, President and CEO. We are hosted by Ian Levitt in their amazing Studio Americana here in Minneapolis. We're excited to bring this programming to you. Throughout the year, we meet fascinating, accomplished people, always willing to talk with us, but not necessarily available to fit into our event schedule. So this podcast is our attempt to capture these conversations and share them with our membership and the broader employer community, and through a medium that fits our increasingly mobile lifestyles. Today, I'm delighted to introduce to you Rita Dibble, the Vice President for Advancement at Metropolitan State University. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
Such a delight to get to know you, Rita. So Rita and I have been chatting for a little bit about the world of transplants. Today, we're going to talk about natives and newbies, what it is like to be a transplant in Minnesota. And Rita has a great story. Can you share with us a little bit what you were talking about? You're more of a native in your transplant status, Rita?
Yes. I was so intrigued by your topic. It's lovely because I know I've heard people say how difficult it is to get to know a new place, to be part of a new community. For me, it has been absolutely wonderful, and not because I'm so brilliant or even indeed Minnesota is so extraordinarily welcoming. It is welcoming, no doubt, but it is because the aspect of being a newbie or a new person in a community is native to me. I have traveled to 28 countries, which doesn't mean much. Most people have traveled far and wide, but I have lived in four, and more than that, I have lived in nine cities while I was growing up through my A-levels and graduating high school. So the art of just moving into a new place is something that is second nature to me. However, I have to tell you that when I moved to Minnesota, I had already decided years ago that I would not move any further west. I was born and raised in India, and I have come to the US via Germany and the UK and then the East Coast. And I had just decided the East Coast is where I was going to be always.
Oh, marvelous. How long have you been in Minnesota now?
Almost 2 years.
What brought you here?
An absolutely compelling mission, cause, and purpose. I work in higher education, and I pretty much was settled where I was until I met the president and then the university called Metropolitan State University, and she made me an offer I could not turn down. And I don't mean that in money. I just mean that in what the university brings to the community, what its value proposition is in Minnesota, and what is the value proposition of Minnesota, mainly the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. So this is intriguing and wonderful. And as an immigrant to three countries now, as an immigrant, I absolutely love what Minnesota says and does with people who come here.
And by president, you mean Virginia Arthur at Metro State, right?
I absolutely mean Virginia Arthur. Mm, yes, indeed.
Marvelous.
Yes, yes.
Well, so you decided to come to Minnesota due to work. You're married. Your husband had to come with you. How did he feel about such a move?
He did not have to come with me, and he did not come with me.
Oh.
We actually have a beautiful home in Pennsylvania at the north end of the Poconos. It is quite, quite gorgeous. It is where our boys grew up. It is where our dogs live, and so does my husband. He retired recently, and he still lives there. I have a very sweet deal. I can go home once a month for a longish weekend. I can have a lovely time at home, and I can come back, and I can focus on work here and live the city life. It's something that most people my age would envy, actually.
I completely agree with you. In my group of girlfriends, we talk about having our hideaway apartment.
Absolutely. I do have one.
You have one.
I do.
That's marvelous.
I do.
Well, tell us about Minnesota before you moved here. And then once you've been here for a while, what were some impressions that perhaps changed?
You know, and I know most people in Minnesota know that you have the reputation of being the nicest people anywhere. And you are. You are actually truly nice. So much so that in the very beginning, I did not trust you. I did not trust the niceness. I thought, I've spent most of my time in the U.S. on the East Coast. And on the East Coast, as much as people might find them brusque, what you see is what you get. Mm-hmm. They are very upfront. Mm-hmm. And so when somebody offers to help me with my groceries in the store, I want to sort of slightly frown and say, why? Mm-hmm. You don't know who I am. And more importantly, I don't know who you are. People are nice, just as their reputation has said. What I found interesting is that niceness goes even deeper. What I mean by that is this. You have an amazingly, profoundly fundamental society. There are people who've lived here for generations. There are people who've lived here as far back as they have kept any history of their family. So they have a very robust network. They do not need another friend. They can't afford another friend. They can't take care of another friend. And yet, you make new friends. I find that incredibly generous. I find that so open-hearted. I find that almost unbelievable, but people genuinely do that. They go out of their way to make you feel welcome, to make you feel at home, knowing full well that their social and obligatory calendars are full. I have to tell you, I made a mistake once of telling a colleague that I needed to go grocery shopping because there was nothing in my fridge. Never tell a Minnesotan you have no food. Absolutely. I had two baskets at my door the next morning and she said, I couldn't sleep because I thought you weren't eating. If you saw me, you would know I don't have a problem of not eating.
I've never heard of that. That's marvelous.
It was absolutely amazing. She had, you know, pickles from her larder. She had canned goods. She had fresh food. I mean, she had coffee. She had everything. And I thought, heavens above, this is amazing. This is the soul and the height of generosity because she had only met me 2 weeks ago.
That's marvelous.
And that is quintessentially Minnesota, and no amount of labels or no amount of saying Minnesota nice is going to convey the depth and how fundamental that generosity is.
You know, we were talking before the program started about this whole essence of being Minnesota and how generationally rooted we are here and how marvelous that is. There's such a strong history of culture, whatever your particular culture is. And then we were chuckling about the homing chip that is in each Minnesota child.
It's implanted when you're born, yes.
Right. But what I find interesting is that because so many of us are natives and many of us have not lived in four countries or traveled to however many cities, the understanding of our amazingness is limited. Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, we talk about traffic until we meet someone from Chicago, or for that matter, Mumbai.
What
Mumbai. Would someone from Mumbai say about traffic?
No. I have to say, if you want to complain about your potholes or your traffic or the lights or whatever else you want to complain about in Minnesota, please be my guest and drive for a week in Mumbai or New Delhi, and then you'll get a better perspective. I did not understand my country until I left it. It is a question of being too close. You do not understand. You know that it is there, that there is this loveliness about your city, but you really have no concept of how wonderful it actually is. Or let me flip that a little bit on you, Bea. People don't understand that it also exists elsewhere.
Ah, good point. Isn't that lovely?
It is lovely. And
I'm going to experience some of that loveliness in warmer weather in a couple of weeks. I'm flying down to visit my girlfriend in North Carolina, where it is much warmer than here. In fact, it brings to mind a Minnesota phenomenon that you might have embraced already. My girlfriend in North Carolina, her daughter, has no fewer than 10 bathing suits.
Of course.
In Minnesota, I have this is a confession moment here, easily more than 10 coats. Because, you know, there's the brisk and wet day, requires one coat altogether. Mm-hmm. There is the sunny, like today, sunny, dry,
but not, cool.
But cool. Mm-hmm. So, and then of course you have the, I think I'm going to die cold, which we've had a lot of this year.
Right.
I moved from my, I think I'm going to die coat to the sunny but brisk coat today. Very excited.
Exactly.
Tell me about your winter coat wardrobe. I got to know.
Well, I have to tell you that my husband bought me what he called was the Minnesota coat. It is an L.L. Bean down coat that's all the way down to my ankles.
Marvelous.
It has a hood. It has everything. It has goose down. To add to the coats, I would say boots.
Oh, yes.
I did not possess boots till I came to Minnesota. Now I have 8.
Oh, congratulations. You have been arrived.
I have, indeed. There are the boots I travel in, then the ones that don't trip up TSA. Then there are the boots that I walk in when it's wet, and then there are the boots I walk in when it's not wet. Oh, yes, absolutely.
That's marvelous. Well, I was at the airport this weekend. My sister came back from her trip to Florida with her family, and I already saw a Minnesota man in boots and shorts walking.
So he's
a native, clearly. Native.
It is true.
So you've got a lovely accent that is completely non-Minnesotan. So
did you pick that up?
So the question is, do your Indian friends feel like you've got an accent now that's changed?
My accent, clearly English is not my native language. I speak two other. I have a mother tongue and then I speak two other languages. So when I learned English, I was taught by Britishers. That's the first thing. But what you are hearing is what in common parlance is called BBC speak. Hmm. It has a hint of the Queen's English, but it is clearer than most native Britishers speak because it is not my native language. And it is something that you're taught in theatre. This is how you're taught to enunciate so that you can speak clearly. I was a stranger even in my own country. This just goes back to the fact that I moved around a lot. In India, we have, I don't know what the count is now, but when I left, there were 22 official languages. So when I moved from state to state, it was pretty much like moving in Europe, which is you had a different language, a different culture, a different community. And so I went to schools that had English medium education. The accent you hear, there are plenty of people in India who have my accent. We are over a billion. There are many more Ritas out there. But yes, I don't speak like an Indian who has lived in one place in India and then come to the United States, if you know what I mean. Because the journey has been a little more circuitous than that.
When you think about embracing the American culture, so you've been in the United States for how many years? You were in New York?
I've been here since 81.
1981. Mm. So what are some of the things you have found yourself most Americanized by? Besides TV, I'm sorry, but I'm a big TV freak. Those of you who know me,
yes.
Love TV. You're a bit of a, you're not a TV watcher, but you'll watch videos on your computer.
I do.
So what else about America have you embraced culturally?
I have embraced the way you dress. I have embraced the occasional lack of formality, which I absolutely adore. Most importantly, and you may not think this is valuable, but I think it is, I have embraced the freedom to be who I am. It is, I'm not suggesting that it would not have been possible elsewhere. All I'm saying is that it has been taken to an art form in the United States, and it has even been sort of heightened in Minnesota. Minnesota is in some ways kinder, gentler, more welcoming to differences, at least the Twin Cities. I can only really speak of the Twin Cities, but the Twin Cities have embraced differences in a way few other places, even in the United States, do.
That's quite a new statement for lots of people to hear.
I think that you do not realize how absolutely lovely you are. I could. I mean, there are books written on the long Minnesota goodbye, which does exist.
Really. That is absolutely. If you travel anywhere as a team, the plan is, okay, we got to leave in 30 minutes. Let's go. And the clock ticks.
Oh. I had this. We had an alumni gathering in Arizona. So the president and I were meeting with a bunch of Minnesotans. We were supposed to be there till 6:30. It was 9 before we could leave. And I literally looked at President Arthur and I said, what happened? And she said, oh, is this your first experience of the long Minnesota goodbye? Because that's what it was. It was amazing.
Isn't that wonderful?
It was absolutely exquisite. Exhausting, but really lovely.
You know, it's funny because when one of the things you talk about, the long goodbye, which speaks to big gatherings, often of family, right, and adopted family, is I'm of the age now where I'm thinking about getting a condo or an apartment downtown. Wouldn't it be fun? Right? You know, that's how you get to live your life, Rita. I'm a little jealous. Get rid of my kids. They can keep the house.
Let me introduce you to the place I live. You have to come see
right?
it.
Right? Marvelous.
It's amazing.
But the big question is, where does my family park? That's the problem. Have this beautiful condo. There are like 35 of us for dinner. What am I going to do with right. 8 cars? It's a problem.
It's called guest passes, trust
okay,
me.
I'll remember that. All right, so you come to someone's house for dinner, which we need to pause on that for a moment because we at SPAC are embracing this idea of the intentional dinner party. Minnesotans will give you directions. They'll help you out. They might even bring you food. We're not as inclined to invite you to our house for dinner.
Let me affirm that.
Yes.
So in my almost 2 years in Minnesota, I have seen the inside of 2 homes.
See what I'm talking about?
And that actually is where the way I look at it, I look at it as your lives are so full of people, of family and friends that you knew since kindergarten, of neighbors that you grew up with, of people who babysat you. You have no room, no space in your mind, no time in the day or in the year to welcome or to have new people.
Okay, you're being way too nice. Let's just cut to the chase, Rita.
Yes,
I don't want to clean my kitchen. I don't want to pick up my living room.
That's true.
You know, and we think we need to. So I just want to call us out that it's as much about keeping a little bit of space from the messiness of the real home, right? And wanting to be a lovely hostess, which requires work. Oh my gosh, I don't have anything to cook. So I will tell you, we're trying to change that, and it's scaring people. Even people I know, I'm having these intentional dinner parties. We, a group of us at the chamber, to begin this intentionality about let's get together. Mm-hmm. And I have actually had my first invite people over for dinners, and the eyebrows go up. You want what?
Right.
We're going to your house? Okay. And there's this whole level of discomfort, like, well, what does that mean now that we have to be, oh, really friends? Oh, that takes us to a whole different level. Now we're not colleagues and friends, now we're really
we
friends.
We are actually friends.
Right?
Yes.
So
yes.
It's interesting. Alcohol helps. Sorry. Little shout out there. But
yes,
it is
true.
For
true.
Everybody. It's a little uncomfortable,
it
but
is.
I think it's a boundary worth crossing because that's when you get to really do life together and you relax a little bit more.
So here is where I find Minnesotans very interesting. Because, you know, having said what I did about how nice Minnesotans are, you won't give people directions to your home. Absolutely everywhere else, but not to your house, and certainly no invitation. So I thought what I would do to counteract this, President Arthur gave me a book when I got here, which says How to Speak Minnesotan.
Oh,
so I read it and, of course, had a great laugh. And I thought, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to invite everybody over and I will cook for them. And you know what? I did that. And they loved it. And they came and they said, could I have this or that or the other recipe? But that was it. And that was a year and a half ago.
Oh my gosh, that's too funny.
So you're absolutely right. Yeah. I have to say, Bea, that is the best thing you could have done, especially with women. If we can get over our discomfort, our men will come along.
Mm-hmm.
They will.
They have no choice. That works. So when you think about Minnesota and your experience here as an individual, how about as a professional? So you're in academia. Mm. How have you experienced your work life in Minnesota compared to, say, New York? Or you came to the United States and went to New York and from there here. Is that right?
Correct, yes. So New York, Pennsylvania, and then here.
Of course, yes. The Poconos.
The Poconos, yes.
How are you experiencing the business community here relative to Pennsylvania or New York? Is there a difference?
Yes, the glass ceiling is higher.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yes, yes. It's slightly higher. That is, again, the differences aspect that we've got. It is still there. Please, let's not have any illusions about the fact that to be a woman and to be a woman of color and then to become a vice president, it takes a maverick leader to hire somebody like me at the level at which she has hired me. So when I said that she gave me an offer I could not refuse, this is what I did. I have to tell you that my previous stint as a vice president in academia was under a retired general.
Oh, boy.
It was great. It was lovely. He was wonderful, and he hired me to be a vice president. The experience of being a vice president under a general and being a vice president under President Arthur are very different. He ran his troops. He was marvelous, one of my favorite people. But it was just different. You stood up and said, yes, sir, if he asked you to do something. That's what you did. That was the way he managed his staff.
My team doesn't do that for me. I'm looking at Haley right now because she's tracking the recording. She never says yes, ma'am, ever.
Isn't that amazing?
It's called team training.
It's called, yes, indeed. Whereas women have a very, almost a flat structure of management. We are very egalitarian. But in Minnesota itself, I have found in some of the more established groups and structures, we have some distance to cover as women. I must say that really needs to be addressed. And it's not unique to Minnesota, but yeah.
Tell me about how you have built a social community here.
What's that?
Really?
My community is pretty much colleagues. No, that is not easy to do.
It's not easy, especially if you work a lot of hours. I have found that I have a lot of dear friends that I've met at work. You spend more time with your work friends than you do your family.
Absolutely.
But of course, you never invite them over for dinner.
No, you don't.
So there's, you know, that little disparity.
Unless you go to a restaurant together.
Right.
We're happy doing that. And they're lovely restaurants in the Twin Cities. They just really are. And I'm such a foodie. But no, there isn't. I don't believe it is easy to find people, you know, who would just be friends.
Well, people are busy doing other things, right?
They are.
I know that for me, I ended up having to be, I'm a native. I've lived in a lot of places, but I'm a native of Minnesota. And still, I have to be very intentional about building a friend network. And sometimes you want it to be not work-related. I don't have anybody I can complain about the boss to. It's a really lonely thing. Who can I complain to? So I have had to make some friends outside of the business community. So I sew. I do quilting.
Oh,
and
lovely.
And a girlfriend of mine I did meet at work who introduced me to the addiction of quilting. And we go on weekends together. So we go into Wisconsin by Eau Claire and we quilt for a whole weekend, nonstop. Oh. And I don't have to talk. I don't have to think. I can listen to these amazing women chatter about their lives and their kids and their work. And it's just really rejuvenating.
It is. It is really. And for someone like you who is so much in the public eye on so much of the time, that must be such a relief. It is. And it is wonderful that you found that quilting is something that I have resolved I will do at some point. It's just
I have some women I can introduce you to.
I would love to meet them. I would love to meet them. We do get together around projects like that.
Nice. Yes, we do.
But a friend who would just go have coffee with you, that's a different matter.
It's funny you say that because I was newly divorced in 1996 and a gal I worked with, I was at US West back then, she was my age, similar circumstances, and she invited me out for drinks after work. And I seriously stopped and I looked at her and I thought, what are you doing?
Yeah.
We worked together.
Yes.
You want to be in my life? It was really jarring.
Right.
It was marvelous. She's still a dear friend to this day. But I remember, we laugh about it now, how shocked I was by the invitation and the desire to be real beyond the 8 to 5 thing.
Yes.
And it took her initiative to reach out, because that stuff doesn't happen automatically.
It doesn't, which I find astonishing. I really do. So when I lived in, you know, in New York State, or lived in Pennsylvania, I remember being a student at Syracuse, and I had this colleague who said, "What are you doing on the weekend?" And I said, "Well, being in the dorm. I mean, really, I'm a student. I'm an international student. I don't own a car. I'm in my dorm. You're going to come and spend the weekend with me, because we are going to do Shabbat, and we are you're going to have some chicken, and you're going to sleep." And there was no choice. So for people who are that brusque and that sort of, you know, very functional and sort of, "No, you're not my friend, you're a colleague," and that's where the line is, etc., there was a warmth and, inclusive quality, which I absolutely treasure, really do. And it's astonishing to me that I don't find it here. I don't find that aspect, that it doesn't bleed over. It doesn't bleed over even once. It's a matter of, if you go out to dinner, you go Dutch.
Yes, you do.
You do.
I wanted to ask you talked about food. You're a foodie. And one of the things that we do well is go out together.
Oh, yes.
So what are some of your, you live in Minneapolis?
I live in St. Paul.
St. Paul.
I live in St. Paul.
I'm doing my little happy dance here. And so tell us about some of your favorite, I'm not a foodie, but you always get the, "Okay, we're going to go out tonight. Where are we going?" And then you have to have your inventory of great places.
Yes.
So what's in your inventory of great places?
Oh, my goodness. My go-to place is Tongue in Cheek.
Oh, is that right? Where's that again?
On Payne Avenue.
That's right. I've been there.
Amazing place. What the chef does with breakfast foods is just spectacular. I love it. I also love Kiachi, because I do miss sushi. It's wonderful.
Where's Kiachi?
Kiachi is also in downtown St. Paul. It is a Japanese restaurant.
Okay, I'm embarrassed right now that I just had to ask you about a downtown restaurant. Give me more information. Kiachi is where in downtown? Is it in the Skyway? Is it a street level?
It's a street level. I am so hopeless with directions that I still get lost everywhere, even after being here for 2 years. So I could not, but I would Google it if I were you. It is absolutely lovely. It is a wonderful place. And who doesn't love Moscow on the Hill?
Absolutely. They have the best patio. I'm a bit of a patio freak.
Oh, yes. Yes, exactly. Considering they're across the street from W.A. Frost, that's saying a lot, B.
Isn't that the truth?
It is amazing. Yes, indeed.
Well,
indeed.
You know, every year we get published, there's an article every year about the best patios in town.
Mm-hmm.
And Moscow on the Hill always ends up to be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So Kiachi St. Paul, I did look this up. It's on Prince Street.
Yes.
So it's down towards Kellogg Boulevard in Lower Town.
Absolutely.
Well, there's a new place I just learned about called Urban Walk.
Absolutely.
Right? Urban
Walk. Must go there. Must go there. Also Tori Ramen.
And have you had the macaroni and cheese at St. Dinette yet?
I have not.
Just got to call them out. Fabulous. Okay. Yeah. Very, very nice.
That sounds lovely. Mm-hmm. Sounds great.
And of course, the place. So if you and I ever get together for a happy hour, you must hang out at St. Paul Grill Bar. That's kind of like my jam.
Is it?
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Yeah. Then I'll be sure. Any particular time? Or does...
Nope.
It's noon.
Pretty much.
It's afternoon somewhere.
Absolutely.
As a sailor's daughter, I can absolutely agree with that.
How is it that you described yourself? You described yourself as a merchant navy. Say that expression.
I am the merchant navy version of an army brat.
I love that. That's very cool. So when you think about your transition into Minnesota, what would be some advice that you'd have for professionals, for women moving to Minnesota?
If you were the queen or king of the universe and you moved to Minnesota, I would say move to Minnesota.
In the summer? Sorry.
Well, I moved here in May and summer doesn't come till June. So no, that isn't so much a case, but move here with a friend already here.
Mm.
That's what I would say. The best way for a door to open is for somebody to open it for you in Minnesota. It is the easiest thing to do, and it will make your life so much easier. I have to give a shout out to the ICLV group. I have to, it was the trip that we took to Nashville.
Intercity leadership visit, St. Paul and Minneapolis chambers.
Absolutely. It was the best trip I have ever taken in terms of professional development.
It was your first trip?
It was my first trip, yes. And I met more people, which has translated into so many more relationships. Professionally, anybody who's moved here knew, I would say, get on that trip if you can.
That's where you and I met.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We did. And I would just do that over and over again if I could, because that was just marvelous. But if you had your way, I would say come here with a friend here already, if you could manage that. If you can't, bring a friend with you.
You know, it's funny because when I think about the value proposition for a chamber, I'm new enough in the chamber business, as it were, to still be thinking about it objectively and trying to determine what is this and what's that value proposition for professionals. And it's in this increasingly integrated culture where your personal life seems to be spreading into your professional life. There's this Facebook connection from your family to your work people, which is really new for me.
Right.
People want to know all about your life,
yes,
not just
do.
About your 8-to-5 life.
Oh, yes,
right?
They do.
In a way that is... you have to just relax into that or decide what your boundaries are. But in my mind, you kind of need to make a decision about that because we're increasingly integrated with this next generation's approach to things. So I'm looking at chamber, the business of chambers, and really trying to determine the value in our marketplace today.
Absolutely.
And I would find that I have found that the questions I get from members that end up being the most valuable in terms of connection and experience is when they say to me, look, I'm looking to be introduced to somebody, or
yes,
I'm here because I want to meet this company, or for that matter, I'm here to see this person, he or she or that company hasn't shown up where I've been. Can you provide a personal introduction?
Absolutely.
And the members always say, absolutely, love to meet this person, don't know them yet, provide an introduction, open the door.
Right.
And the receptionist unfailingly welcoming, engaging, warm, provided the introduction is made, right?
Exactly.
I have found that to be so beneficial for new members, for new companies, women, real strong network among women, and I like taking advantage of that. So I've really seen that as a value for chambers overall. What do you think?
I think that you're absolutely on the right track. I would even go one step further and ask you to get together disparate groups, groups that you didn't think wanted to meet. And I found that in the leadership visit trips, because you sat on the bus with somebody. I sat with somebody who was with the Wilds. Well, we don't have a sports team, so I would never sit with this person, but what a wonderful connection that was.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we don't even know the questions we should ask as new people. And you don't know the answers you need to provide. Meeting serendipitously, that is something that we can do. What Minnesota and what the Twin Cities have, which is quite marvelous, is you're a very, very large small town. And after 2 years here now, I'm running into the same people again. And so when I go to a gathering, I do see familiar faces, which is a wonderful way to feel that you are beginning to belong.
But it requires commitment on your part to show up.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Take a chance.
And I would tell every newcomer, go to as many places as you can.
Mm.
And I don't mean just the bars, although they are great. But go to as many gatherings. Go to chamber meetings. Go to all the networking events you can find. You will find that people will be warm and will be lovely and will welcome you. And it'll help you professionally.
You know, at the chamber, at our chamber, we're trying this. I started about 18 months ago. We created a series of committees based on the various priorities that our board has kind of laid out for us. And one of them is our Economic Inclusion Committee.
Right.
And
yes,
we didn't really know at first, okay, well, how do we address that question? How are we going to embrace that experientially? And our first go at this came out of a conversation with one of the committee members. It's about access. And he said, when you and I are friends and we're going to go to Tongue in Cheek for breakfast and we're going to chat about life, Over the course of that conversation, I'm going to tell you about a sale I just saw on boots because it's the next season.
Exactly.
You need to upgrade or change out because now it's
brisk. You need another pair.
Absolutely. Well, because you and I have access to one another, you hear about that opportunity.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
If you and I aren't having breakfast together, you perhaps never know about that opportunity. And so one of the men in our committee was talking about a similar kind of thing. He's having happy hour with the fellas, and mm-hmm. they're talking about a real estate opportunity. And mm-hmm. he says to a friend of his who's a contractor, have you heard about X, Y, and Z?
Absolutely.
And because of the access around the table, that person gets a business benefit. Right?
That's right. That's right.
And his observation was, you know, it isn't anything more complicated for us to begin than to create more opportunities for access to one another outside of what is our most normal leaning. Like, I will go into a room and I'll find another middle-aged woman to hang out with because I'm thinking we're naturally going to have something to talk about.
Right.
Or I'll find someone who looks a little bit more nervous than me, and that's the person I'll go hang out with because that's great.
That's right. Exactly.
But if we can be intentional about dinner parties with people and mix it up. So we did that. I would be about, and I'd run into a woman named Rita. I've never met her before. She seems interesting. And I'd say, hey, Rita, I'm putting together an intentional dinner party among strangers.
Yes.
For the sole purpose of just creating access to one another. Want to come? Mm-hmm. And what would you say?
I would say absolutely, because there's one thing I've learned about Minnesota, and you are definitely unique in this. You love stories. Mm. You tell stories. You tell them well. You remember them. You recount them. My first introduction to Minnesota was through Perry Home Companion. It really was decades ago.
And what do you know about our children?
Exactly. Yes.
They're all above average.
We do know that.
Thank you.
And all the women are strong.
Beautiful, I think, in there somewhere, too.
Well, the women, who is good looking? Well, men are good looking.
Oh, there is. Good
the
point.
Women are strong. And I think that, well, I don't know about the men being good looking, but I know, they may be, but the women are definitely strong and the children are all above average. But you do like stories like nobody does. Mm-hmm. So getting that party, that dinner party you're talking about, how fabulous.
Right?
Because there will be 8 women or 10 people at the table. I don't want to exclude the Y chromosome. But again, the people at the table are going to tell a story.
Yep.
And more importantly, the people at the table are going to listen to a story.
Right.
That is so Midwestern. It is so Minnesota. It is something I just love.
That's beautiful. I'd not heard that before. Appreciate that. Well, practice your Minnesotan for us and tell us a story about moving here or an experience you had here in transition or something that you've remembered since you've been here.
Okay. So there is, and this is a bit of a confession as well. When I first got here, of course, being the person I am, I had to scout out some of the restaurants. And I went to a restaurant in Minneapolis called Spoon and Stable. And there was a couple sitting next to my table, and this is an older couple. They were celebrating a birthday party. And so I am a fairly impulsive person. And so I told our waiter, I said, please give them a dessert on us and put it on our bill. And they were just, I remember his name. His name was Ort, and he wrote me a note after that. It was one of the best conversations I had with this couple across the table. But more importantly, the next week in my mailbox, because I gave him a business card, I said, I'm new here, etc. And so he sent me a book by a Norwegian author, and it was the most wonderful book. I still have the card and the book taped to my refrigerator. The confession part of it is that I have still not written him a thank you note for that. So if by any chance he hears this, it is in the mail, believe it or not. It is coming. But to me, it was one of the most overwhelming and beautiful gestures, right along with a colleague who gave me 2 bags of food because I said I needed to go shopping.
That's marvelous. That's marvelous. Rita, I can't tell you what a delight it has been to talk with you and get to know you a little bit better. So thank you for taking a chance on this wild adventure with us.
The pleasure is mine. It really is. It's fun to be in Minnesota. It really is. And I don't want to say that too loudly because everybody will want to come here.
That's what we say, right?
Well, we will leash the polar vortex on them and it'll keep the riffraff out. That's
right.
Okay.
That's right.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Truly my pleasure. Thank you again. And thank everyone for tuning in to Bee's Table Talk. Go to stpaulchamber.com/podcasts to listen to more episodes featuring interviews like this. Make it a great day.